Let me just say hello to everybody. I'm Artie, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to the Friday Evening Inner Space Talk. To those of you who know us and are our friends, you know that we've been getting to know the speaker just before the talk. Our speaker tonight, Carolyn Ward, is joining us from Australia, where it is about 3:20 a.m. So thank you, Caroline, for getting out of bed and looking so fresh and ready to take on the day on that level. Carolyn has established her own consulting firm where she pioneered organizational transformation processes that ran through Australia for over 10 years, close to 13. She's worked with communities and leaders in transition in Chile. She's an author and facilitator, and I think the two areas that I know that I've explored with Caroline myself have been resilience and living the life you love. So let me hand over to Caroline. And just before I do, there's two things to keep in mind. Caroline's going to speak and then do a very short meditation. After the meditation, she'll be taking your questions, and I will put those questions to Caroline at the after the meditation. Caroline, thank you.
Thanks, Auntie. Thanks very much. Okay, so hi, and good evening. But as Auntie said, for me, it's good morning. But this particular topic, I would get up whatever time of day was necessary, because I know what it feels like to feel really stuck, like life stuck, you know, and a number of times in my life, but especially in my youth, you know, in my early 20s, mid 20s, my teenage years. I know how debilitating it can be to sort of look out at the world and go, bloody hell, what do I do now? Or, you know, really not have any sense of a future. Fast forward, I then also know what it feels like to be stuck when I'm trying to work on something and it's not flowing. I'm supposed to be writing a book at the moment. I've got a publisher and an editor working. And I tell you, there are times when I feel entirely stuck. So I know what that feels like. I know what it feels like when, you know, you're overwhelmed with things and you just don't know where to kind of go in, which is your leverage point. So I think I would get up whatever time of day for this, because I believe it's been a big part of my life's journey to work that out, to work out how to provoke movement. I remember reading many, many years ago, and it said, if you set people in motion, they will heal themselves. Now, I don't know about healing so much, but this idea of, you know, just to be able to move, to provoke some movement somehow. I think that one of the things that I would share that I've understood about sort of underlying tendencies around getting stuck, why, and I think it's really important to understand why we get stuck. And one of those would be, for me, key thing, that our lives are fundamentally driven by shoulds, musts, expectations from ourselves, but they've generally been sort of implanted as conditioning and belief systems that we've adopted over time. And this is so relevant for what this topic is, how to keep moving forward when you're feeling stuck. And what is feeling stuck? You don't feel good. You don't feel good at all. You feel inert, you know, confused, overwhelmed. You know what that is. You know, and it's sort of like a spiraling down of energy rather than when you feel good, it's a kind of expansive, a flourishing energy. At the beginning of February, I bought this course learning about setting up stuff online. And I got to a part around, you know, moving things through social media. And it felt like years. It was like I'd gone down this rabbit hole. You know, I was Alice in Wonderland, down this rabbit hole. And it seemed like I wasn't progressing at all. And I wasn't. Well, it felt like I wasn't. And in the end, I really just had to stop. After I don't know how many weeks, it felt like maybe 3 weeks I was in there, and I just said, stop, stop. I feel lost. I'm not making any progress on this, and it's impacting everything. I cannot do this at this moment. Maybe tomorrow, maybe next week, but right now I can't. And so I just sort of shut it down. And what my learning was in that moment, excuse me, was that often we do that. We focus on something we should be delivering or we should be achieving, or there should be results, or I ought to be better than that. I must do that. I have to do that. And the energy of that is so heavy and so forceful, and it's driving down a particular route. And in driving there, I've lost my connection to my source of regenerative energy. It's like this forcefulness. And sometimes you have to let it go because we push. We live in a culture in our world full of expectations, full of, you know, we can often talk about violence in terms of, you know, that happens in the streets, that happens in war zones, but very often we're really violent with ourselves. And then we get into an environment like this time of lockdown where it's very harsh externally, and then we're harsh with ourselves. Harsh when really we need to be a little bit more wise and a lot more kind. And I would say that's key. So I want to just unpack this in two ways today. And that is to talk about energy. How do we move our energy when we feel stuck, we feel hopeless, helpless, overwhelmed, depressed, down, whatever language. If you hit rock bottom, there's nothing you feel you can do. You can. You absolutely can. And it doesn't have to be vast. It doesn't have to be huge. All we're looking at here is how do you provoke some movement. And it's much more simple than you would imagine. Much more simple than you would imagine. So I want to talk about that. Energy. And in a way, the other thing that I'd like to talk about too is still about energy, because I think everything is about energy. And that is about whether we're resisting or we're allowing. And you can't be doing both. You're either using your energy to push against something, or you're allowing things to happen and gently directing. So fundamentally, it is about energy. And we've got three energy systems. and they all interact with each other. And so it's the mind, body, spirit. So if we're talking about the mind, you know, it's not new knowledge anymore that we have anywhere in the vicinity of 60,000 thoughts a day. And the language around that's really important, you know, that we have 60,000 thoughts a day, because we don't consciously generate them. They are generated. They're triggered by everything that's around us. And so the mind as a system in itself, it's probably, I think it's the most important one to be able to learn to, even then I was thinking of the words conquer, dominate, control. They're all such words of, in a way, they can be quite violent, can't they? So to learn how to direct my own mind, to be the master of my own mind, that is probably one of the most fundamental things to put attention to in life. To understand how it works, understand fundamentally I am not my mind. The thoughts that I'm thinking are not truths. They're not truths at all. But we live like they are. And we think we are our minds. Even if we don't logically and we don't intellectually, so often we believe the story that our mind is telling us. So the mind as a kind of place to leverage to move energy is really key, but sometimes it's really hard to do, right? It's just like a runaway train. But it's interesting, it's only during these last 4 months that I have really had the opportunity, that I've been in the experiment fully to understand the deep importance and absolute and total possibility of being the one who's in charge of my mind. It's an amazing, amazing thing. For me, it's amazing to be able to decide to stop the thoughts. And it's highly possible. And for me, the key has been to put my focus on well-being, not as a should or a must, just as a general daily orientation. And why? One, because I think I deserve to feel good. I think everyone deserves to feel good. I think life is about being able to feel good. And I think we have to have a focus on something. And I know when I feel good, almost anything is possible. I always think about when you fall in love, and I'm sure of the, you know, almost 100 people here at the moment and whoever else is watching on Facebook, most of us have had the experience at least once of falling in love and hopefully having it reciprocated. You know what it's like when you're in love. The energy that you have is incredible, and nothing bothers you. And the person who was the biggest pain in the neck, who drove you crazy before you fell in love, well, it's just them, isn't it? You know, they're okay. You know, they're having a hard time of it at the moment. Everything sort of becomes like the rose-colored glasses. So when our energy is in that kind of higher vibrational frequency is what it is, when we're vibing at that higher state, when we feel that good, everything around us is fine. Everything is possible. And we see more. We see a whole lot more opportunities. We see a way through. The obstacles just kind of brush past us. You know, it's like a gentle caress instead of being sideswiped by something. Because when our energy is low, when we're in those kind of heavy frequencies of blaming others or ourselves or feeling guilty or apathetic, out of, you know, inertia. I'm not going to go spend too much time on that. But when we feel that, it's like heaviness, right? It's so hard to look up and see anything bright. So it's not about having someone to fall in love with, but it is about saying, when I'm in those higher energies, life is good. Life is doable. There's movement. I can handle what there is to do. And even if I have a bit of fear, it's all right. It's not the only thing. So for me, this whole area of every day that my primary focus is about my well-being. And it's been literally an experiment for me. How do I feel good every day? And some days, you know, something might happen, it scratches an old story and I get this wave of sadness. My effort is not to tell a story about it, not to add to my mind and generate more of that energy. So if my emotional system, so that's part of my body system, right? My emotional system and my mind work together. The mind, body, spirit all work together. So I just share with you my practice for the morning, which is absolutely at this point not negotiable after 4 months of every day working out how to do this. I wake up and I try to throw back the covers and jump out, but it doesn't always happen. But I open the curtain, the blind, I bring up the blind. And I remember one day I looked out and the sun was rising, but it was very grey, which perhaps is relevant for you up there in the UK. For us here, it's usually blue. The sky is blue with maybe some clouds, and I'm in the country, so there's beautiful trees. But I'd been used to looking out and seeing these gorgeous blue skies since I moved here, with the, you know, the silhouette of the trees and just going, oh, and the sun, and really lovely. And I woke up this one day and I opened the curtains and I saw it was overcast. And being overcast, I automatically felt my energy go, oh, you know, a thought and a story, it's overcast. And in that moment, I said, no, I'm not going to tell myself just because the sky is grey that, you know, I'm not going to allow that energy of kind of downness to come in. Because why? It's just a story. It's just an idea. It's just a perspective. And so I've started talking. I'm alone, so I can do this without fear or favour. But sometimes I'll talk to whatever is outside. I'm more extroverted. And I talk to the clouds and I went, wow, you guys are painting the whole sky. It's amazing you create this other colour. It's interesting you give more depth to the winter trees, the bear. And it's quite fascinating, isn't it? And so I started to choose to see it in a different way. So this whole thing of mindset, I open the curtains, I find what's beautiful, I make my mind and my eyes and my being search for what is beautiful. And then I say, okay, let's go do the day. I make my bed, because it's easy not to make your bed when you're staying at home, isn't it? I make my bed and I fold my pajamas and I put them under the pillow nicely folded. People laugh at me for that. But I can tell you, in Chile, one of the places that I lived, I was lucky enough to live where there was someone who used to help out in the house. And I used to have a very good relationship with this woman. She's became someone really important in my heart world. And Chile's very classist, very upstairs, downstairs. But I'm Australian and we have a very egalitarian sort of thing going on. So for me, she was just another human being who I really liked. And that for her was a relief. So she would come in and remake my bed and fold my pajamas. And I'd come in at night and I'd pull back the pillow and I'd see these pajamas, like, you know, folded the four seasons. And it made a difference to how I felt. I felt my energy feel like I was someone of value. It's ridiculous, right? But I would say you have to observe the small things in life, not the big things, the small things in life that make you feel better, and give them to yourself. So the bed, the end of the day, I go there, my bed's made, I pull the pillow back, there's the pajamas, and there's little things that are putting structure in my life that move my energy upwards. So sometimes when, you know, you're stuck at a computer and your mind is foggy, you can't think, and we just keep trying to push through, right? You have to let it go. You just have to let it go. Move away and move your body. If you like running, if you like dancing, if you don't like any of those things, you still got to move your body. I suspect that some of you are wanting big strategies, but there aren't big strategies for moving forward when you're feeling stuck. It's about the small things that you do. It's about the way you speak to yourself in your own mind. So really key thing is to be able to observe yourself, observe your energy systems, observe your mind, observe how you're feeling, and intervene. If you're not observing, you can't do anything. It's like you become truly a victim to the impact of what's going on around you. And I know that it's not easy at the moment, also either living alone or living with others. You know, the internet's fantastic because it enables us to connect with others. That's the sort of thing that's really important, to keep community connection. I think Netflix is a great kind of outlet, or other variety platforms, but you can't give over all permission to Netflix to sustain you, because if you do, your energy just gets drained. More than anything, it is about allowing ourselves to feel good and helping ourselves feel good. Our nervous system, as part of our body, we all know about the fight, flight, and freeze. Our autonomic nervous system gets stuck. We can't think clearly when we feel afraid, when we feel under threat. So we know that the quickest way to intervene there with our with our bodies and our nervous system to take us back into the relaxation response, to move our brain system, our neurological system, to a point where we can actually focus and be clear, is to breathe deeply. And as soon as we do that, breathe deeply, there's a very simple system called, you know, rectangular breathing, or in fact, if you breathe in for four and out for eight, that in itself, you do that three times, that signals the brain that the threat has gone and you can return to the parasympathetic in the autonomic nervous system. You can return to that relaxation response where the frontal lobe, the neocortex comes back online and you can start to think. So breathing in for four, breathing out for eight. It is all about being the observer of our integrated systems, our mind, our body, our spirit. It's about being able to intervene, to be able to move us back to a state of well-being. Because from well-being, even if it's a little bit, you know, I feel a little bit better. And then from a little bit better, you feel a little bit better. But you have to keep moving energy. Not in a violent way, not in a forceful way, but yes, in a logical way, in a determined way. No one else can stop me from feeling stuck. You know, that as sometimes heavy or hard that can seem, that I am the one who I can have a coach maybe who can do that, but I can do it for myself, being able to gently start to move my energy, baby steps. We're so overwhelmingly accustomed to doing massive things, feeling like we have to do big things. But it's, if we can do baby steps, little tiny interventions that make us feel a little bit better, make us see a little bit more, then what we're able to do is keep moving, keep getting clarity. Because when we're stuck, it's that we have a lack of clarity, right? I would just say, don't, from my own experience, we don't make it too difficult. Because when you feel stuck, when you feel overwhelmed, when you feel down, thinking you have to do big things to get out of it, even if you've got the pressure of deliverables, if you're still working and you're not being productive, and the anxiety of that, if you allow that to keep kind of building as a story, makes you even more stuck, doesn't it? And what I've seen in all the, you know, the years and all the work with other people, but primarily with myself, is to just chunk it right down. What can I do? Where can I intervene? Can I do something with my mind right now? Can I meditate? Can I think better thoughts? If I can't, okay, accept that. Don't push against it. No judgment, no self-criticism. I think this is fundamental. Self-criticism is an attempt, right, to improve. It's an attempt to make ourselves better. But we know now, I mean, it's logical anyway, but we know from lots of studies in positive psychology and in high achievers that the worst thing that anyone can do when they're feeling non-productive, when their self-efficacy is down, when we don't feel good about what we're showing up as or being able to deliver, the very, very worst thing that we can do is be self-critical, to speak to ourselves in ways that are harsh. I can say that in these 30 years that I've been on this sort of self-awareness, waking up journey, that the one, I can name it as the one thing that has been the biggest change driver has been the most important for me over these years, to shift my up and down feeling about myself, that some days I felt good about me, other days not, was banishing, you know, putting in retirement the inner critic. Not to be naive about there are things I need to improve or things, being observant and constructive, but the critic, no. I've started to, for the last almost, I would say, 20 years nearly, to learn to be more kind, to be more encouraging. You know, in the same way you'd be with a kid. You know, if you have a child who's overwhelmed with their homework, they're not being able to do it, or they're bullied at school, they don't feel good about who they are. Logically, we know that speaking to them violently, as some parents do, it doesn't work. It makes them need therapy later on, and it reduces their capacity for kind of unbridled curiosity and flourishing in life. And it's the same with us. But when you encourage someone, and positive psychology and many tests and many, many studies, deep studies with elite athletes and high achievers and normal people, that say if you focus on what you're doing well, you know, really this whole area of appreciation and gratitude for oneself, the what, you know, appreciating what you're doing and what you are achieving, even if it's tiny. The studies show if you can get to a level, a count of 12 positive interpretations of what's happening for you, what you're doing, if you can get to 12 positive, no matter how tiny, before you touch one that is a kind of constructive or a critical intervention, you're living in the land of people who are called high achievers, which just is basically people who can do what they say they want to do. So they have a high self-efficacy. And the studies show that these people are 100% oriented towards observing things, observing themselves, and looking at things in a kind of with a positive twist. Okay, that's interesting. What happened there? Ah, okay, I can say, ah, okay, we need to shift that, we need to adjust that. But it's outside of them. They're not got this inner critic going on. Okay, so I realize we're right at time, and I want to do a little kind of reflection in a way on this sense of being more encouraging and just like intervening with encouragement rather than criticism. So let's just take a moment now, and where you are, you can do this with your eyes open or eyes closed, because it's just using your thoughts to move energy. So we do that all the time. You can have your eyes closed or open, whatever's most comfortable for you. Breathe all the time, but not always very well. And often we breathe in, but we don't breathe out properly. So let's do that. Let's just start by breathing in for the count of four, and breathing in from your diaphragm. And then breathing out for 8, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. In for 4. And out for 8. In for 4. And out for 8. And I wonder if you could just have this sense of letting go. Whatever you have been pushing against, even if you don't know consciously what that is, what you've been holding on to, stories that you've been telling yourself of incapacity. Just imagine you could sort of take it all off like an overcoat. It's summer there anyway, so just let the overcoat of resistance just fall to the ground. And you don't have to give yourself affirmations, but things like, I love feeling good. I love it when things flow. When my energy is good, everything's good. When I'm feeling good, I let others off the hook too. It's true. And as you sit there, I want you to just observe your energy. You're not saying you do feel these things, but you love them. And I want you to try this experiment just to put a slight, gentle smile on your face. Remembering that our three systems, the mind, body, spirit, all work together. And if you've got a smile on your face, that just changes your energy. And I love to feel good. And if the voice comes in and says anything that's contrary to that, you go, yeah, maybe. But I'm so much more than that. And when I feel good, I know that I do good. I'm breathing out. Leaving the overcoat of shoulds and musts and have to's and expectations on the ground, in the past. And as Paul McCartney's mum said to her in the dream, just let it be. Just let it be. No resistance, no shoulds. And breathing in, breathing out, let it be. Knowing that when my energy is good, most things are possible. And if I can just feel a little bit better, then I can feel a little bit better and a little bit better than that. Positivity begets positivity. Good energy begets good energy. The better I feel, the better I feel. Guide my thoughts, guide my body. Taking time to reconnect. To What makes me feel good is my spirituality, if you like, my spirit system. And very gently, just allowing that sense of self-care, which again is that sort of part of the spirit system in the mind-body-spirit. Some self-care, being encouraging, being kind, but it's scientific as well. And if we just do one thing, Arti, there's a thing called the principle of progress. If we just do one thing each day, that's an important thing for us to do. Not the hardest thing, but one valuable thing. Check it off the list. We'll go to bed feeling like it was a good day. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Caroline. Thank you very, very much for everybody who's joined us. And I appreciate people do need to leave. But for those of you who can stay, we're going to be exploring a couple of the questions. First question that's come in. Caroline, I feel very frustrated when I'm not able to communicate openly and freely with other people. I hesitate and I'm fearful of judgment somewhere deep inside. I think at the subconscious level. So what should I do to become more confident?
Gosh, that's such a great question. And it's prevalent, you know. I think I don't know very many people in the world who don't worry. And there is that terrific saying that says, you know, what other people think about me is really not my business. My business is what I think about me. And, you know, sometimes they can seem like platitudes, those sayings, but they come from a fundamental truth. So how do you get to a point where you don't care what other people think about what you're going to say? And, you know, it is a really tricky one. And I think you can't, For me anyway, there are still a couple of people in my life that I'm tentative with. I don't know how to communicate with them that is going to work out well. And so, yes, my tendency would be to sort of shut down and withdraw. And something like that happened recently with one person who I love a lot, but is a bit scary sometimes. And I do feel is quite judgmental. But what I found in not saying what I felt in this one particular situation, it caused much, much more complication, ongoing. And in the end, I had to be able to put the boundary anyway. I had to be able to say, look, you know what, I didn't feel that was the right thing to do. Not what they were doing. I had to take responsibility for my own thing. I said, I've got learnings from this. It's cost money, it's cost time, but I'm taking learnings. And this person said, well, what learnings? Like, oh. And I said, well, I learned that I have to take more responsibility for myself. There was something else I can't remember. So I would come back to this thing about the inner critic, because there's some sort of kind of, I think it's like a karmic thing. Being critical of yourself and being critical of others, judgmental of others, if you clear that out, you can't do anything about someone else's judgment, right? And your fear of that. But if you, I suspect you're judgmental of yourself, critical of yourself, and maybe of others as well. And if you clean that up, if you find yourself more encouraging to yourself, more generous to yourself and generous to others, knowing that others really are struggling too. There's a saying that I love, I read once, and it comes from Alcoholics Anonymous, actually. I can't remember where I read it, but it says, "There, but for the grace of God, go I." And what I like about that, it just says, I'm blessed today that that's not me behaving like that, because I could behave like that, whatever that is. So it gives me some space to be more generous with myself, more understanding and generous with myself and with others. And when I get more encouraging with myself, less critical, because what criticism does is it eats away, it kind of grates away all the positive energy, my resourcefulness, my resilience. So if I'm being critical of myself, all of the resilience that I might have to listen to maybe someone else's judgment or criticism without collapsing goes. So the first step is going to be to clean up your own inner world. I think that there's a really good practice, like I was saying, this study of high achievers, people who are self-efficacious, who can do what they say they're going to do, which is a sort of resilience and just a capacity, is that they have a habit to find 12 positive aspects before they look at one negative one. It's not as simple as positive, negative, but in what we're talking about, it can be. Generous, appreciative. And I've done this experiment with myself, actually about getting up early, that I would normally go, oh, I didn't get up, I fell asleep when I tried to meditate early, or, you know, I'd have all these criticisms of how I didn't do well. And I use this technique of making a list of 12 positive observations of my effort before I went to one. And it was extraordinary. Within 2 weeks, I was up early. My meditation was better. I felt good in the beginning of the day. And I used really pathetic achievements, right? If I look back, I go, I heard the alarm. I didn't press the snooze. I went to the bathroom. I cleaned my teeth. That's 4. Pathetic, right? But I did it anyway because I knew that this worked intellectually and I wanted to test it. And by the time I got to 12 apparently pathetic achievements, I felt like, well, I gave it a really good shot, didn't I? And instead of saying I fell asleep, I said I was awake for a good portion of the time. And so I felt like, wow, good on you. You're really giving it your best shot. You haven't given up. Good on you. It was like this sense of great. And being more kind and encouraging with yourself, you build that resilience. So then you're able to speak more clearly your own voice, because you know that that's more important than what anyone else is going to think about you. And you're less reactive. You've got more inner confidence. There is only really true inner confidence, but your confidence is real. And it comes from building up your capacity rather than cutting it down. So I would say for me, that's the very, very first step to be able to get to that point where I go, you know what? If I'm doing this work, I don't mind what other people think about me because I am really looking after my own inner world and my expression. So it's a longer, perhaps a slightly longer route than kind of bearing up and having a go, and then dealing with the aftermath. But I think in terms of longevity, of resilience, of happiness, it's the best way to go is clean up your own heart and mind around that. I hope that, you know, satisfying. It will take a little bit of time, but not as much time as you might think. And you can do something. That's the good thing, is you can't do anything about anyone else, but you can do something about you. That's all in your hands, everything. So that's the really great news. You can always do something about you.
Thank you. I think you've answered this, but I'm going to ask it anyway, just in case you want to add anything else. Somebody else is asking the question, how do you deal with other people's criticism? I think you've answered it, but is there anything else you want to add to it?
I think, you know, feeling judged or being criticized by others, if you don't feel strong in yourself in a very genuine way, like, I really am giving it my best shot, I really am doing well, and I'm taking responsibility for myself, but I'm building in a culture of encouragement. If I've got a culture of encouragement internally, then I'm able to hear more clearly. Also, if someone's got a genuine piece of feedback that isn't judgment or criticism in an attacking way, but it's a genuine piece of feedback, then because I feel confident and I feel good about what I'm doing my best, because I'm telling myself, I'm recognizing that, then I can hear more clearly also the feedback in a genuine way. And I can go, okay, yeah, okay, let me have a look at that. I can't see that right now. Can you tell me a little bit more what you mean by that? So instead of being defensive or feeling attacked, it becomes a way in which I can kind of deepen my relationship as well. I can help that person unpack a little bit what they're thinking, and I can maybe see something I hadn't been able to see before. But because my inner world is strong, I can do that. Excuse me.
Thank you. Do you have any tips for the following? If a person needs a routine and structure to feel grounded, but then ends up feeling trapped by those same things and resentful of them. so how do you balance that?
How to balance that? Yeah, it's like an inner conflict, isn't it? A dependency, when it says I need routine and structure to feel grounded, but feel resentful of that. I think I'm someone similar, I would say. And it was my big experiment this year. How can I let go of external structures and find my own internal structure? So I think that one of the things is that you've always got to somehow have your own choices in there as well. You've got to, one is if you've got a routine and a structure, you have to decide to give it permission to support you instead of taking it on as an external thing that you feel bound by. So you get to choose whether it's something that supports you or not, whether you've given it permission to support you. And if you do, you go, all right, I'm giving you permission to give me this support, then you're in charge. You can then say, well, all right, I'm going to be free of you in this aspect today, or I'm going to just let it go for a little bit. If you feel that you're in charge, then you can let it go and you can say, you know what, I've got to go do something else now. If it feels like it's something imposed, if it feels like you're bound up or trapped in it, then you get resentful. So you have to take it from something that's an external imposition and you take charge. and you choose it. And this is for anything, really. You know, even with the lockdown, you know, you can say, well, they're making us. Oh, yeah, but does that empower us to say that? You know, they're making us stay at home. Well, then it's an us and them. And I'm disempowered in my life. So I go, okay, this is the situation. This is what's happening. Let me accept it. And now what? Where is my choice within that? Well, I can choose to make this great. I can choose to create it however I want. I can choose to feel really good. I can choose to accept this like a gift. I can, a lot of choice in there. So I think it's a fantastic question because, yes, sometimes we really do need to put that routine. But if you choose to let it be in your life, you give it permission, then you can choose to adjust it as well. So the idea is really to empower ourselves by choosing it, by giving permission to something to support, and then feeling more free around the flexibility that you might have to choose something different at some other point, but not feeling imposed upon, not feeling beholden to or trapped by. And it is important, as you've done, it's fantastic to observe yourself and go, no, I feel, I'm starting to feel resentful. And that level of resistance, because then you start to push against energetically, you withhold things, you start to have story in your mind, right, about blaming and, you know, and then it becomes other, you know, you and them. Them could be people or systems or whatever. And then there's separation, and then you've got stuck in being alone. It's an ugly route, isn't it?
Mm.
So the game is really make a choice. Even if it's something that you have to do, take out the have to and go, okay, I'm going to choose to do this. I'm going to work it out so that it serves me. And in that, if you start to feel resentful, you've got to take it back on again as your choice and then start to adjust it so it makes you feel better. I'm going to tell this very short, Arti. Every morning I have my normal shower and then I finish with completely cold shower. And it goes for about 30 seconds, sometimes 20, but about 30 seconds maybe. And in this part of the world where I'm living, it's a little bit like without the kind of heating you guys have, but England in the winter. So it's really cold and the water is icy. Now, I choose to do it and I put my mind in a place where I choose to enjoy it. And it's a really interesting experiment. Some days I go, oh, no, I don't think I'll do it. I go, no, I'm choosing to do it. Not because I have to, because I know it gives my subconscious mind really clear information that says I can use my mind to change an experience. Other people I've told go, oh, that's awful. Oh, I couldn't. And I would have thought that before too, but I know I can. And I can decide, I can invent that I'm in Norway, in a, you know, a sauna, then I'm going into the mountain, icy cold pools. Your mind is amazing. You get to choose the experience. The external situation is what it is, but you get to choose. Your mindset will decide everything. So I think choice is, I choose it, yeah, and the experience is good. If it's not good, choose something else. So I think it's really important to understand the power of your own mind.
Wow, thank you. I know that was a question that I had to giggle because I could see a little bit of me in that last question.
Yeah.
All right, the next one, again, is a really good question. Here we go. Thanks for the interesting talk and the many tips to work on. I always have difficulty making decisions. This makes me feel stuck and not moving on. How can I work on this area and leave apart or leave or step away from insecurity and fear when taking decisions.
Yeah. So Archie, the last question was yours. This one's mine. a little bit of me in this. Yeah. I remember when I visited Oxford in, it was 1994 or five or something. And Munda, who is the coordinator of the retreat centre at Oxford, and she was telling me at that point, she said, I have this practice that if I don't know the right decision to make, it doesn't matter who's pressuring me to do it, I won't take a decision, I won't make it, because I don't want to be committed to something that's not 100% in integrity for me. And I took that on, I thought that was fantastic. Sometimes, yes, it's fear of making decisions. Other times, well, I have one which is I live with lots of possibilities and I think there could be a better one coming up. So I don't want to quite commit to this because there could be something better yet. So whatever it is, you know that there are five categorized psychologically, five types of fears. But underlying those five types, that there's only one fear. And I think sometimes this is really important to understand in this topic that you're talking about. The underlying fear of all human beings is that I won't be able to handle it. So whatever it is, you know, that it will be too much or I won't have the capacity, or what if that impacts my health, my family, my capacity to deliver, whatever, what if I don't like it? And I think it's really good to address that underlying fear that says I won't be able to handle it and look back at life and go, you know what? I've been able to handle most things, because you wouldn't be where you are today at the age that you are, even if you're one of the younger people here, right? You wouldn't be at the age that you are if you hadn't been able to handle most things. So you just go, it's okay. There is some questioning there. That's normal. That's human. But look, I can handle most things. So now the question is, what would I really love? And there's two tricks I find for making decisions when you're really not sure. And you know, you can write down, if you've got a number of different options, you can write down, you know, what are all the things that, you know, the pros and cons. You can do like that. But then project yourself into the situation as if you've taken the decision. Project yourself fully and be in the experience. So you've written down what it would be like, what you can imagine the result would be. And as you do that, you project yourself into the future, into the decision, and notice how you feel. Notice, do you feel expansive or contracted? Do you feel more kind of unlimited, you know, open, or do you feel tight and small? And obviously, if you feel more expansive and more unlimited, that's your key, that's a good decision, that you'll be able to handle it. Whatever happens, you'll be able to handle it, because your energy is telling you it'll be good. This is where I'm going to go. So you can do that for a number of different options. And I would also say, you know, life's a long journey. You can't really get it wrong. I think we get this part wrong, which is that we have to get it right. We're in a creative process called living. You know, we're creating our own lives. most of the time, unfortunately, in modern society, we're trying to fit in with what was already created. And that causes the problem. More than anything, that causes the anxiety. But when I just think, no, it's okay. And this decision, it's like, well, I'm going from, I don't know, London to Bristol, and I have to get to the tube, and then I've got to get to the train line, then I've got to get, you just chop and change along the way, but you know where you're going. And where you're going in life is what you decide, but it should be something you decide that you would love. And it doesn't have to look like a particular thing, it can be how you feel. I want to feel so free. I want to feel secure. I want to have beautiful relationships around me. I want to be doing work that I really enjoy doing, being paid well for that. I want to feel strong no matter what's happening. So you can create a vision for your own life that you go, yeah, that's a life I'd really love. And I'm going to get there in each moment. I'm going to feel well. Is that decision going to take me there? Let me feel. I could feel really open with that. Okay, oh no, that feels heavy and dark and tight. No, I can't go that way. So I think that is very helpful. And to know when you look at your trajectory up to this point and you go, I've been able to handle most things and I'm here. It'll be fine. And talk to yourself really well. Be fine. You've always handled it. You can handle the future. Hope that's helpful.
Thank you. Okay, we've got three more questions. We are running 20 minutes over late, over time. So I'm just going to throw them at you in a faster speed, if that's okay. So the first one is, your proposed technique of listing 12 positive items is interesting. To what extent, though, is such a technique imposing another should, in the sense that one then feels the pressure to do this every day?
Again, I would say that's about choice. About choice. Because I can hear in your question, reasonable is doubt and resistance and hang on a sec. I think that's valid, but do it as an experiment. I never do anything because anyone says I should. And I don't think anyone else should do anything because I say they should. I think it's, for me, life's an experiment. I thought, well, that's interesting. How would that work? And so I started to do it. And I noticed it wasn't so much a should at all for me. It was like, if I did this, and I do it often, And it's become more of a habit that my way now is less to look at what's wrong and more to find a positive twist on something or a good interpretation. And I notice that the path unravels and opens up when I do that. And when I look at, I jump straight to what wasn't working because I can do that too, it closes down and everybody around closes down. So for me, it's about looking at the result. It's not about imposing. I think it's a very good point. And I would say again, I can choose to do it or I can choose to resist. And I would say, don't take it on as even an idea that someone's imposing that you should do that. No, see if it works. Check and see if it supports you. And if it doesn't, don't do it. I agree. No more shoulds. Shoulds is just heavy duty. No more.
Okay. This is somebody who saying, I recently lost my wife to COVID-19. And though all tough, and although I have family, I live on my own. I'm lonely and I binge on Netflix.
Yeah.
Netflix. But it's getting boring after a while and I feel stuck. I know I need to make changes and move on. with my life, but I am still in lockdown. And I'm 85.
Right.
I think recent loss means it's time to grieve and not push yourself. But what do you feel?
Oh, first I just want to say, you know, my heart goes out to you. I lost my husband when I was 30. He was 43. But it wasn't a situation of a lifelong companionship, and it wasn't a situation of, as you say now, being alone and feeling lonely. And yeah, like Netflix is good for a bit and then it really doesn't help, does it? I do think that, yeah, grieving has its own time. I would say, if you're watching Netflix, thank the Netflix. Like, consciously be grateful for its assistance, its support, because you're in that sense, then you're being complicit. You're saying, all right, I'm going to give you permission to accompany me. Again, it comes back to this thing, it's in my hands. It's not like I'm surrendering to the pixels on a screen to make my emotions, you know, kind of be less extreme at this point. I'm going, I need support, and I'm going to give you permission to support me. Thank you for that. So I'm still working with my own energy, and I'm driving it in a sense. I think that for me, one of the great things to do when I'm feeling alone or lonely, and feeling this kind of level of loss, I can't imagine. I can imagine only. I think get yourself a journal and start and just write. There's a beautiful process called morning pages, which Julia Cameron in The Artist's Way shares. And it's just when you get up in the morning, get yourself a cup of tea and you get three, like a writing pad, three pages long, and you just write. You write whatever is there without judgment, without criticism, without, and you don't read it back. You just write down and you do three full pages and it's fantastic. I think that could be a really helpful and kind and somehow a very lovely accompanying journey. And you put down whatever you think, feel, and it's all good. It's all okay. If you get angry, if you're sad, if you're confused, if you're happy, if you're, you know, hopeful, whatever it is that is inside just comes out. And sometimes that's all it takes to get the movement going. Journaling is a really, really helpful thing. And these three pages, I would say, is really helpful. And as you are using internet to be here, I would say also you might find that there are some online groups of people who share similar experiences, but you want to find people who share in a way that's supportive, supportive and uplifting. Again, observe your energy. If you found a group and you shared, how would you feel afterwards? You'd want to feel uplifted. If you don't, well, you know, that's all. You just got to keep being kind to yourself and give yourself time. And many blessings.
Thank you. I think this is the last one. I dare it look and see if there's any more, so I won't throw this last one at you. And it's to do with resilience. Do you build resilience alone or with others? How much time is this journey useful spent alone?
Okay. I think resilience, it has to begin first with oneself, because in the end, everything else can be ripped away. As the previous gentleman's question, in many ways, the only thing that accompanies us through the whole of time is life itself. So I think resilience is first and foremost an individual responsibility, but not in a heavy way, in a privileged way, in a responsible way that says I can, an empowered way. And again, I would say that is about putting into retirement the inner critic, the judgment, the way that we speak with ourselves that cuts away at our resourcefulness, at our self-confidence, our self-efficacy. I think it is about doing one thing a day that can make you feel like, well, okay, I'm moving forward. This principle of progress. I think it is about being generous hearted to myself and to others, looking after my energy. So if I'm feeling good, I'm bound to be and on a constant, not constant like every minute of every day, but there's a regularity. There's this principle of cadence, which I, when I first heard it, I thought, wow, that's phenomenal. I like that a lot. And it speaks a little bit to your question about with others as well. It's the individual in the group. During the Second World War, when troops would march overland in their very kind of military style of not the goose steps, but just general marching, right? But in time, everybody marching in time. And it was that sort of discipline. And it built this cadence over time. And what they discovered was that when they got to a bridge, especially, I guess, the wooden bridges, but they get to a bridge, they would have to break step. If they didn't, the mass of energy that had been created by this group cadence, but it works for the individual as well, could break the structure of the bridge. The energy was so intense that it could knock down the bridge, so they had to break step. So is it something you build individually? Yes. You can't depend on others, because then if they're gone, I'm left by myself without my own resilience. But each one responsible, and that interdependence, then we build a bigger sense of resilience. That means together that we can face anything. And that's pretty awesome, I would say. So it's a great question, and I hadn't thought about it before, so thank you. I like it. Yes.
Wow, it's gone 8 o'clock here. So I'm going to say thank you. 5 o'clock there. So I'm going to say thank you to everybody who stayed on. We've loved the questions. So thank you very much, Caroline. We've taken 2 hours of your time, so thank you for sharing that. We really hope you have a fantastic rest of the day that's restful.